another parable. And each time we look at a parable, it tells us something new about Jesus and new about the Lord. You know, even reading the Nicene Creed, you know, we're saying things that I'm hearing from 5th through 7th graders, you know, from 12 to 2, when they're saying things like this. So, Pastor Frank, you're telling me that there was a time when God was not, or there wasn't ever a time when God wasn't. Yeah, you know, try to explain that to a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old or an 11-year-old, that God has always been here. Or we try to explain the Trinity by saying something like this. The Father is God, the Son is God, and the Holy Spirit is God. And then we say, the Father is not the Son, and the Son is not the Spirit, and the Spirit is not the Father. All right, let's talk, right? I mean, you're trying to reconcile this mystery of the Trinity, and we say things like this. Jesus is 100% God, and we say he's 100% man. The math doesn't work, right? So this is where we have to believe that God's ways are greater than us. We cannot think God's thoughts. And we have to believe that he is fully transcendent, way above us, omniscient, omnipotent, and the scriptures say this, he's your friend. Right? You're telling me God's that big and he can be my friend. He can be closer than a brother to me, it says in the scripture. Yep, that's exactly. And so as we walk through these parables, we are getting to know the Lord more intimately. And we are going to be in Matthew 18. And this is a parable that Jesus told. And I just want to remind you that the context for this, Jesus has just talked about, if there's conflict, here's how you do conflict. Make sure you go to that person. If that person has sinned against you, you go to them. And if they don't respond, then take a buddy. And if they still don't respond, you're going to go to the church leadership and have them help. And if not, then you treat them like the pagan, he says. And Peter is trying to figure out how to do relationships. Because remember, Peter, of all the 12 disciples, Peter's very emotional. And, you know, I think he is liable to hold grudges, to be somebody that hurts somebody, but also to be the one who gets hurt. And so I think this is going to be powerful for us this morning, because I know in prep for this, this is hard, but it's beautiful. If we can allow the scriptures to read us and to take us where we need to go, because we believe that the Spirit of God is inside of us if we know him, and that the Bible is living and active. So, if you have your Bibles, turn to Matthew 18, and we're going to read this parable that Jesus gave in response to Peter's question. Because Peter's trying to do relationships. So here's the way Peter starts. Then Peter came up to him and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? So if you were just to take forgiveness in the Old Testament, and you were to take some Jewish rabbinic literature, the general, you know, take on this is, if you're a forgiving person, 3 to 4 times, if that person has hurt you 1, 2, 3, 4 times, okay, you would be qualified as forgiving. And remember, Jesus is a rabbi. Jesus is, he started his ministry when you become a rabbi at 30 years old, and he's a rabbi for 3 years. And so he's, Jesus responds, or Peter says, as many as 7 times? Jesus said to him, let me tell you what the law really means. Let me tell you what it means to understand grace and understand people. I do not say to you 7 times, but 77 times. Okay, now, this is when the Bible, you know, some people say, okay, it's pricking me a little bit. I feel a little prickly, and then it kind of moves into meddling in your life, right? Okay, I can hear 7, but what, 77 times I'm supposed to forgive somebody? Wait, what? Jesus says, okay, let me tell you a story, right? Let me give you a parable. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, "Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything." And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, "Pay what you owe." So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, "Have patience with me, and I will pay you." He refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. What does that mean for you? What does that mean for us to forgive? And I think more specifically, I want us to think of the idea of being patient with people who hurt us. Because the key, I believe, to understand this passage is the initial debt that's owed. I think there you kind of can read this in a wrong way, because when it's talking about servants and a king, it's more like this. It's like there is a king. Think of the king. Think if we had a monarchy in the United States. It would be like we had king of the United States and we had servants, but they're governors of all the states, right? And so the king had his governors or his servants underneath him. And one servant owed him 10,000 talents. Now, how much was a talent? One talent was the average, was what the average worker made in a year. So let's just say it's $40,000. One talent. Here's what he owed him. 10,000 talents. So I had a very smart man do quick math for me in first service. And he did it using that 400,000 or the 40,000. And he said it'd be $400 million. That's the debt. And that's the key for understanding this path. Here's the magnitude of the debt. If you're king and someone loses you $400 million, your kingship is now in trouble. Your own personal job, your profession now is in trouble. And here is this man who has messed up, this governor, this servant that is messed up. I mean, this king is in jeopardy. And what does he say? What does the governor say to him? "Have patience with me." I think if we collectively could have patience, if you really look at this word, I think your life, our lives, our church would be transformed. Because when you look at that word in the Greek, you could split it up into two words, macro meaning long, and themeo, which basically is kind of a Greek reference to a boiling feeling. But think of the element of mercury at room temperature. What happens, right? It loses its composure, right? So one way to think about it is this idea that, you know, to be long and temperate means you don't lose your composure. What would it mean for us, right, to have the inner spiritual patience to bear injury without melting down? What would you be like if you could bear injury upon yourself, right, from someone else, and you don't melt down? I think, you know, it doesn't control you. It wouldn't destroy your inner joy. Because here's what we do know. All of us will suffer. You know, that's a given. We will all suffer. Suffering comes to you. So to be suffering takes no choice, but to be long-suffering, that's different. To be a long-suffering, a macrothymeo Christian means you have to be very deliberate and very bold and very active to choose, I'm going to take the suffering and be long-suffering, right? I'm not going to let it define me. I'm going to bear my injuries without melting down. I'm going to bear troubles. See, that's a complex choice. That's not a simple choice. It'd be easier just to say, you know what? No, I'm a victim of this because, shoot, the king had every right. I mean, this guy did him wrong. You've been done wrong. Everybody in this room's been done wrong. It'd be easy for you to say, no, it came to me, right? And I'm just going to receive that. But Jesus wants us to have freedom. He wants us to learn to deal with it. And if you go even a little bit deeper with the sufferings and kind of what the thymeo means, the boiling passion that you're supposed to deal with in a long-term way, I think it points to anger. I think it points to how do we deal with anger, and how does patience look like that, or look in contrast to your anger, right? Some of us would say, no, I'm not really bitter towards anybody. I think a lot of us would not admit that. But here's what Hebrews 12:15 says. Take care lest any harbor a root of bitterness. Springing up, it defiles many. That's what the writer of Hebrews says. And I'm wondering why the writer of Hebrews called anger a root. And I'm wondering if you think about a tree in your yard and you uproot the stump, right? And you cut it down. The problem is there are still roots there. And God, through His Word, is describing anger like a root. Because I think a lot of us can confess the sin of anxiety and feel okay about that. I think it's easier to admit the sin of worry. I can do that, Frank. I can admit that I am a worrisome person. I can admit that I deal with depression. But how is it and why is it different when it comes to admission of your anger? What is it about anger? Because you know what? I want to hide it from myself, and I always want to minimize my anger. But if you think about it, it's down there, and it's affecting me and you. And many times, I don't even think I know it. And many times, I'm wondering if you even know it. It's subterranean, right? It's subsoil. It's the root underneath things. And so we minimize it. And we say things like, yes, I've been deeply disappointed. And occasionally, I've been mad at my parents. But you know what? That doesn't affect my view towards authority. Some of you say, yeah, like I'm kind of, you know, frustrated a little bit towards religion, and you don't realize how much of an effect it's had on you even sitting in church because of what's happened to you. And when you don't acknowledge it and when you minimize it, anger seeps in, and what we get are low-grade spiritual fevers. We all have them, and we live in this. And so when we look at what ultimately happens to this servant, it says, you know, at the end there, it says, since you are not grateful from what I've done, since you have not been, have not forgiven your fellow servant, into prison with you. I think many of us are, in a sense, in that type of prison. We are ruled by our anger. We are tortured by this prison of being angry because, you know what we can't do? We cannot forgive. We will not learn patience. We will not learn what it means to have this forgiving spirit. So I just want to take us through three things, right? Three things. What does it mean to be to have a forgiving spirit? What does it mean? Because here's what happens is, you know, when we fail to forgive, when we fail to be patient, we think that anger just kind of passes us. It doesn't pass us. It passes into us. And this is when you see your friend or your mom or your dad change over time. They're not the same person anymore. I go to their house for Christmas, and they're just different. It's like this root took hold. And they don't laugh. They don't belly laugh anymore. There's not a light quality to them anymore. It's taken over them. They can only see through the grid of their suffering. They don't even understand long suffering in any way. So what does it mean? What is Jesus trying to tell Peter? Peter, you're emotional. You hold long and big accounts with people, and you can't. I need you to be my disciple, because here's what we know happens with Peter. Peter then becomes one of the first evangelists, right? And changes Asia Minor. Peter and Paul are all through the book of Acts. He wants Peter to be right. So how do you and I learn to put on this forgiving spirit? Because here's the thing. Here's what we have to remember. If you know Jesus, all of the fruits of the Spirit are inside of you. What are they? Love, joy, peace, patience. So you know, if you have the Holy Spirit, it's already inside of you. You have patience in you. This passage is trying to pull it out. It's trying to access it inside of you, to make it accessible so you can use it. So when we look at this parable, what's the first thing the king does? What's the first thing that you and I need to do in order to learn what it means to be a forgiving, to have a forgiving spirit, to be a patient person? The first thing he did is what? Is he canceled the debt. Right? What does it mean? Because when someone wrongs you, think of, you know, when I think of someone that's wrong, whoever that person is that comes up into your brain, they have created an emotional debt of pain. It's a debt. And you feel the debt. And you know what? It has to be paid. And what we're called to do is we're called to cancel it. But what many of us want to do is I want to make that person pay the debt. He caused it? Well, then they're going to pay it. How can I make that person pay an emotional debt to me? Well, here's what I could do very directly. I can insult them. I could be just cold to them. I could withdraw my friendship from them. That's the way. They're going to pay the debt. And here's what it's going to look like. I'm going to be very, you know, I could hurt them professionally. That's a direct way to hurt people that have hurt you. You've done what to me? Okay, I'm coming after you. You can do it indirectly. You could slander them, right? You could gossip about them. You could take their reputation and tweak it. You could indirectly do that. But what does it mean? What does this king do? Because here's what happens, is when you decide to inflict that pain on them, you know what happens? It does feel better. Because you know what's happening? The debt is getting paid. And you can do some mean things to people, and you begin to feel like, okay, that's right. And over time, if you go after that person over time, you know what happens to that? It does get paid, but here's the problem, right? It begins to hurt you. And that's what I mean when people change. When you decide to become that type of person, right? Here's my compass. Justice. Justice. And you go after that person and it sweeps over you. You know what? Your heart gets hard. And you begin to realize, you know what? I like it when I can do something to get back at that person. And it passes into us and it hardens us and it makes us cynical. But here's what he says. He says, there's another way that you can cancel that debt. Here's the problem, is it still has to get paid. But you know what a forgiving heart, a patient heart does, is you begin to pay it for them. And what do I mean by that? What does it mean for you to cancel the debt of the person that you're mad at? It means like something like this. Every time you want to rehash the past, that you decide, nope, I'm going to stop. I'm going to close my mouth. I'm not going to say it because I do not need to do that. And you know what you do? When you close your mouth, it hurts. But you know what you've just done? You've made a payment, right? You've made a payment. Okay, I'm going to cancel that debt. I am going to pay by closing my mouth. Every time you want to be cold to them, but instead, you know what, you decide, no, you know what, I am going to give them a hug, and I'm not going to say anything cynical. It hurts you, you make a payment. Because emotional debt has to be paid. Every time you have a chance to run them down to somebody else and you don't, it hurts when you have the opportunity, but when you don't, you make a payment and you cancel the debt. That's what it means. Every time you see them prospering, every time you see that person you can't stand who hurt you, and you see them, you know, moving the ball down the field or you know, getting a promotion, whatever it may be, it feels like little pins inside of you, but you don't say anything. And you say, Lord, help me. Be happy for them. It'll hurt, but you know what? You make a payment. It is costly not to take revenge. It's very costly. But when you pay that down, when you understand that over time, here's what happens. It does go away. The emotional debt gets paid, and God uses it, and eventually, here's what's going to happen. You will feel better. You will be empowered. Because you know what you've done? You've melted evil by making those payments. But you made the payment. The king made the payment. $400 million. He didn't have to make the payment. He made the payment. And so, when we refuse to bring the matter up, when we refuse to run them down, even though it hurts, slowly but surely, the anger will be going out. And I know it depends on the size of the wrong that you've experienced. So sometimes it'll just take a few hours, and you just need to make the payment. You need to close your mouth. You need to be happy for them. It may take an hour, or maybe it'll take a few days, or maybe a few weeks, or maybe a few months. And in the type of really severe pain, it may take years. But when you see what Jesus has given us, and you can cancel that debt, and you can make that payment, you know what? You will change. That your mother or your father or your boss, you know what you've done? You made the payment. You've beaten them in a sense with love. And that's what he's trying to say. Can you cancel the debt by making those payments? Second thing, not only cancel the debt, here's what we have to do, and this is tough. We have to be moved to what? To pity. That's what it says in the scripture, but I like this term better. It's compassion. We have to be moved to compassion. And that's what the king did. He said, it says here that the servant fell to his knees. Have patience with me and I will pay you everything. And out of what? Out of pity for him. That just means out of compassion. The servant saw nothing. He just saw, I want my debt paid. But here's what the king says, or the king experiences, pity. How do you have pity on someone? How can you be moved to compassion? Here's what I do when I want to be mad at somebody. Here's what I do. I want to make them a caricature. I want to say, here's what they are. They are just a mean person. They have a terrible mouth. And in my mind's eye, I create a caricature, a cartoon of them with this huge mouth with, you know, stuff coming out. And I think that's all they are. You know what that person has? They have one trait, and it's their mouth, and it's what they do. That's all they are. And if I can make this person very simple, ready? Very one-dimensional, you know what I can do? I can hammer them. But here's the problem. As soon as we realize, oh, man, they don't just have a mouth. You know what they have? They have a 4-year-old daughter, and then they have... Oh, man, I bet you they had a dad who had a mouth or a mom who had a mouth, and maybe that's part of what they knew. And then you think, oh, but then their parents probably had parents that had that. And you begin to realize, no, this is a person who's struggling. You know what happens? This person changes from a caricature, a cartoon that you make in your brain so you can hammer them, to a complex person that maybe is going through a hard time. And you begin to see them differently. What happens when you do that in your marriage and you realize, I'm not just going to respond to that comment or these 2 hours. I'm just going to respond to, like, no, okay. They're just having a hard, right? Frank's just having a hard day, right? And we see people like that. You know what can happen? You can have pity on them. Your heart can go out. But if you want to stay mad, keep them one-dimensional, man. Keep them that cartoon that only does one thing to you. Keep that tape playing, Because if you can only hear that one quote that that person gave you or that one situation, you will be able to destroy them. But you know what happens is we realize it destroys us in the meantime. And so even if you remember the parable of the Good Samaritan, the pastor and the assistant pastor didn't feel anything for the guy who was mugged on the Jericho Road. Who was the person that felt anything? It was the Samaritan, the guy that wasn't a pastor. He wasn't a Christian. And Jesus said, he is the one who felt something. That's the difference. Do you, for those that have hurt you, have pity on them? Can you see them as more than just the conduit of hurt? If you allow yourself to see that person as complex, as multidimensional, you know what's going to happen? I know what's going to happen is you're going to be able to understand them a little bit more. And it's scary when you want revenge, but that's where the healing comes. And you want to justify yourself, and I want to justify myself. But then you let go. And, you know, it's behind all types of things, all types of prejudices, all types of, you know, just this one-dimensional thinking. No, this is a servant, the king thought, who there's probably a lot of stuff going down. And you know what I'm going to do? Is I'm not going to get revenge. I'm going to pay down the debt for them. And then I'm going to identify with this person. I'm going to say, okay, how can I understand them more? Let me try to put myself in their situation. Why would they speak this way? Why would they do this act that would hurt me? Let me just try to understand where they're coming from. If you allow yourself to do that, you know what happens is you begin to feel less anger and less justification and more what? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. All those things that are supposed to come out inside of you. But instead, I wonder, what cartoons are up on your wall of people? And you see the one thing, and Jesus says, no. How can we what? How can we have pity? Because you know what? It's going to give you freedom. And the anger, you know what? It will be beaten away. And it will ultimately change you once you realize, right? Once you realize the only way you can ultimately get there, though, is to see that, hey, I know this person, like the servant, this person hurt me, but it's really worth a couple hundred denarii. It's nowhere near the $400 million worth of debt that I put King Jesus in because of my sin. And this person owes me, what, a couple hundred dollars? And I am hammering this person. And I had this debt of $400 million. And what did King Jesus say to me? King Jesus said, hey, it's okay. You know what? I'm going to cancel your debt. And not only that, I'm going to love you. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to be the father of the prodigal sitting on the porch, you know, in the rocking chair, can't wait till you come home. That's how much I love you. You think this changed Peter? Could it change you? Who are you mad at? Who are you holding on onto a grudge against? And how much joy has it stolen from you? How much time has it taken from you? So there's this really great thing that happened at Presbytery yesterday. Notice I said great thing and Presbytery in the same sentence. That's a Presbyterian joke. Normally Presbytery isn't fun, but it was good. This is a really good thing that happened. One of the things that happens at the end of Presbytery meetings is guys come up who are thinking they might be called to ministry. And they're brought up before the Presbytery, and they have to do two things. They have to give their testimony as to when God saved them, and then talk about what does it mean, when did you feel called into the ministry, per se. And so we're there, all these guys, it's kind of the end of the day, kind of tired, and this guy Denard gets up there, Denard Winborn. He gets up there, he's with Westminster Brandon, and he starts and he says, well, I was sitting in my jail cell. That was his first sentence. You don't normally hear that at Presbytery meeting either. That's a start, right? I was sitting in my jail cell. And he talks about how he had a 20-year sentence, right? And one of the other prisoners invited him to his Bible study. And he went for about a week. And it was one day, and he had heard the gospel. And I guess the prayer meeting or the meeting was about to begin. and he couldn't leave. He couldn't leave his cell. And then he just starts to cry. And he just said, there I was, and I realized that no matter what I had done, God forgave me. No matter how much debt I had, God forgave me. And he just starts crying up there in front of everybody. And, you know, there wasn't a dry eye. And he, you know, talked about. So then he says, and so then for the next 5 years, you know what I did? The only thing I did was I went to this Bible study. This guy who led it and ended up leaving, and he started to lead it. And he just said, I just started to talk to people every day about the gospel, about Jesus. That's all I did. And I prayed, and I read the Bible, and I shared, and I prayed, and I read the Bible, and I shared. And he's in his cell, and he's going to all these groups. And he does that for 5-6 years, right? And he's got a 20-year sentence. But he says, you know, it's just all I wanted to do. And then, after 6 years, I guess he had a parole hearing. They wanted to know how he's doing, and they asked him, "What did you, what have you been doing?" And that's what he said. I read the Bible, I pray, and I share my faith. That's pretty much all I do here in prison. And you know, God was obviously working. And next thing you know, one thing leads to another, and over the next few months, his story gets to the governor, right? And this 20-year sentence on one day was then written. You know, he was absolved by the governor in one stroke of the pen, and he got out after like 6.5 years. And he's up there, and all you felt from him was, I don't deserve any of this. I was in total debt, and God saved me, and then he brought me out of jail. I mean, the whole place went silent, and I mean, it was so beautiful to watch this guy change. And in prepping for this message, I thought, you know what? I mean, he is a picture of this. He is in complete debt, 20-year debt, and God cut it off. Not only did he save him, he cut his sentence by 14 years roughly, and here he is a free man, and the only thing he wants to talk about is being married and sharing the gospel. That's it. That's all you felt from the guy. That guy is what? He is free. You think he's counting what debts people owe him? No way. I'm a prisoner. I should be in jail. Why am I going to be mad if someone hurt me? I can't even believe I'm walking free in the world. And Jesus is trying to say to the church and to the disciples, look, here's what you can become: a works righteous, holy huddle that begins to look at the scoreboard. And you can't. Because every single person here, right, has been saved from this massive debt. And the whole thing, you know what? Here's the thing. The whole thing points to what? It points to Jesus. Because Jesus is our King, and here's what Jesus said. You know that debt that you owe? You know the debt? Do you want to live out this patient life? Let me just remind you of this. I'm going to get up on that cross, and I'm going to use a financial term for my last words. And what's that term? What are the three words that he uses? I mean, these are financial terms. It is finished. And essentially that means the debt has been paid. Your debt has been paid. You are free. If that is true, who are you mad at? If your debt has been paid, if Jesus got on the cross and he said, I am your King, right? I'm going to pay the debt. And I will look at you and I will still love you and have compassion upon you. And he gets on that cross and he says to you and to me, right, it is finished. You know what you can do? And what I can do is we can be patient and long-suffering with people that hurt us. You know what we can do? We can keep our composure when suffering comes upon us, when insult comes upon us, when injury comes upon us. Because here's what we can understand. We can understand what has been done for us. It's what Denard knows, right? He knows what it means to be forgiven, to not be in jail anymore, to have freedom. He says, I'm out. I am free. The debt has been canceled, right? What if we were to live like this? Because here's why I think Jesus told this parable, is he saw a lot of Christian people locked up, playing scoreboard, saying, you did this to me. I won't speak to you. I'm not even going to text you until this. Or I'm not even going to do this. Or I'm not even going to do that. And that doesn't mean you're reconciled. But what it does is when you begin to say, you know what, you've got to pay the debt this certain way, it begins to eat at your heart and ultimately you change. But when you know that you've been loved and cared for well, I tell you what, I don't think it's hard. I don't think it's hard if you are reminded about what has been done to you. So my grandfather, last few years, was in this nursing home. I'd go and see him, and he, for a little bit, was with this one man in his room, and I was there a few times, and I remember the wife was just particularly loving. You know, I just noticed. I mean, she was just kind of, you know, he wasn't all there, but she was particularly doting on him, and it was sweet. You know, I'd been in seeing, I saw her, I forget her name, but, you know, we talked a few times, and there's this one time, and I just said, hey, you know, I think it's really neat. You guys have been married this long, and man, I just, the care that you show your husband is neat, and I think it's special. And so, and she says, oh, well, you have no idea what I went through. And she talked about this condition that she was in where her husband took care of her. She goes, oh, you have no idea the way my husband cared for me. So what she basically said is, it's my privilege to do this, right? It's my privilege to do this for my husband who has dementia when I recognize and experienced all that he did for me. It wasn't something she had to do. It was something she got to do. And we understand that. I think we can see opportunity for, you know what, us to be long-suffering as a privilege. And we get to enter into what? Into forgiving people and to showing them what it feels like. Why? Because we've been forgiven for so much. But if you don't remember, if you don't go over the truths of the gospel, if you don't go over all that Jesus did for you, you're just going to play scoreboard. It's just going to be, okay, what have you done? What have you done? Monday, you were better. I was a little nicer on Tuesday. Whatever. Saturday, you probably owe me that, and I owe you this, right? And why haven't you done this, and you haven't done... No. You're free, right? You're free to love. Colossians 3:12 puts it perfectly. It says this, therefore, as God's chosen people, the people that he paid this $400 million debt for, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with what? Clothe yourself with patience. How is that going to change a relationship this week? If he loved and forgave, right, this servant with of so much, you know what he says? Watch out, because your tendency is to be like that servant who forgets the debt that's been paid for him. And you know what you can do? You can treat other people in your life like they owe you. And you will just get justice. And I'm wondering if that's not part of what we struggle with. Why some of our lives are entangled with anger and bitterness, because the root has kind of set and it's got a foothold on us. And Jesus is saying, do you not know how you can be free? What is this parable saying to you, right? We believe the Bible reads you. Who can you forgive? Who can you live in this freedom with? Who can you say, you know what? I'm sorry. Jesus paid my debt. I was hurt by this, but you know what? I don't have to live in bitterness or rage or anger. He did this for me. You know what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to forgive you. And I'm not going to hold it against you. It's just what I want to do because Jesus has done this for me. That's what he's trying to tell us. Can we do that? Your life will change, right? You live according to this, and with the foundation being the gospel, and that it is finished, your life will change. Let me pray. Let me ask God to change.